The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Good morning. Welcome into First Take. There are new champions. Yes, sir. The Baylor Bears. Huge congratulations. Coach Seth Greenberg here with us. Of course, Max Kellerman, Stephen A. Smith. I'm Molly Karen Rose. Gentlemen, good day. Looking dapper as usual. Just like none of us expected, except you, Coach, who did switch your pick in the end, and you had Baylor winning it. We'll get to that in just a second. But, Max, I will start with you. Is it fair to say at this point that Gonzaga was overrated?
Of course. Of course they were overrated. It's not that they weren't good. They were very good. All year they were very good. But all year we heard, all year we watched, we heard, we talked about, we in the media, how special Gonzaga was, how this was the special team, how they might go undefeated and win the whole thing and be the first team to do it in a million years. And what we saw as the tournament came to a close was that there was a special team, a lot of really good teams. Houston was good, like let's talk about the Final Four. UCLA was really good, Gonzaga was, but Baylor was special. Gonzaga was a little lucky to get by UCLA. Let's face it, that game could have gone either way. Baylor dominated Houston. They beat the brakes off those guys. And how do they do it? Baylor, as they've been doing all year, Coach said it just the other day. Coach, you said it. They have more guys who can get their own shot, right? But they dominated this game on the glass. They hit their shots. They stayed connected on defense. To my eye, Suggs was the only guy on Gonzaga who looked like maybe he could start or play on that Baylor team last night. Baylor was the special team. Lots of really good teams in the tournament every year. Gonzaga was one of them this year, but not the special team that we've been talking about. There was a special team, and it was Baylor. And by the way, maybe if there wouldn't have been for all the cancellations and postponements in their season, Baylor goes undefeated. Who knows? But I know this. Once it got to tournament time, especially as we moved along in the tournament, that was one of the best and most dominating performances I have ever seen by a team late in the tournament. They destroyed everything in their path. And by the way, let's not forget, basketball's a game of runs. Gonzaga went, you know, closing out the half as if after it looked like it was over early. Wait a minute, it's single digits. Oh, hold on a second. And with a little under 13 minutes to go, Kispert gets his shot blocked, and they come down the other end and shoot the three. And with like 12 minutes plus to go in the game, you knew the game is over. That shot blew out, that sequence blew out the candles. There was a special team, but it wasn't the, let's face it, overrated Gonzaga. It was the underrated Baylor team.
Max, first of all, I appreciate you paying attention when I told you that there were floor gamers and shot makers all over the floor for this Baylor team. But what does overrated mean? All right, let's think about what overrated means. Think about this Gonzaga team. They can only control what they can control. Preseason, they challenged themselves. What did they do? They played Virginia. Oh, they were the defending national champions. Absolutely spanked them. Oh, they played West Virginia, a physical team. They played a Kansas team. They played Iowa with the National Player of the Year. They ran through the NCAA tournament. It's not their fault that people put them up on this pedestal. They were historically good offensively. So you lose one game and all of a sudden you're overrated? No, you're not overrated. You had a historic season. Could you finish it? No. Success is a journey, not a destination. There are roadblocks and detours along the way. Their final roadblock was Baylor. Baylor, a team that had a couple of losses. All right, Baylor, a team that went through a pause. Baylor, a team that was a bad matchup. I talked to Mark Few this in January. He said, you know what, Seth? He said, the one team that concerns me is Baylor. Their style of play, their ability to defend, their ability to rebound the basketball, their floor gamers, their shot makers. But let's not mitigate or minimize what Gonzaga was this year. They were a historically good offensive team. Did they finish it? No, they didn't finish it. They lost the game to Baylor. Does that mean they're overrated? First of all, who rates them anyway? It's guys like you who rate them. You know what? To me, They are really, really a good basketball team that got beat by a better basketball team. Mm-hmm. Baylor, if they played 10 times, I really think they'd win 8 of the games. It's a bad matchup. That doesn't mean they were overrated. That just means that in that moment in time, they were beat by a better team.
Well, Coach Seth Greenberg, let me say this to you, sir. I really, really don't appreciate you coming on this show on national television and forcing me to agree with Max Kellerman within the next
within the first 5 minutes
of the show. That's what you forced me to. Now, I will say this. Let me get specific here with you, Coach. When I say overrated, I don't view it in the literal sense. I'm just saying Baylor should have been rated number one. God, don't put it on guys like myself and Max. You're the one that covers college basketball exceptionally well, I might add. One of the best analysts in the business. No, make no mistake about it. But listen, it was less than 48 hours ago that you were right in front of us talking about Gonzaga was going to win, and then obviously you had an epiphany and you saw something in Baylor. But it was that tough of a decision for you. And looking at them last night, I don't know why it was that damn tough for you. I know why it was tough for me, because I only saw Baylor twice this year, to be quite honest with you, and I only saw Gonzaga twice as well. So that's why it was tough for me. You know these teams. And to look at Baylor, more athletic, bigger, stronger, faster, and they built like football players, like they trained with the football team or something. I mean, listen, first things first. Here's all you need to know. Baylor's first offensive sequence, they missed about 3 shots and had an offensive rebound each time, okay? You got Vital, who finished with 11 rebounds. 8 of them were offensive. He had 8 offensive rebounds by himself. The entire team of Gonzaga had 1. They got out-rebounded 34-17. Timmy, I mean, I watched this dude's moves in the post throughout the NCAA tournament, and I said to myself, this dude is special. Well, yeah, when he bigger, but when he went up against guys just as big, if not bigger than him, excuse me, them big boys for Baylor came out. They must have been watching First Take, because they came out, and they said, who the hell do they think we are? Oh, we ain't having it. And Timmy was, I mean, if you, I've never seen someone minimized overnight the way Drew Timmy was. I mean, he was minimized. I mean, he looked like, he just looked like a dude that was a small forward compared to those Goliaths, those mammoths of men in the post. So you look at it from that perspective. And then, of course, the guard play. I mean, Butler, Teague. These brothers are just something. And Mitchell, of course, just special. And so I look at it from that perspective. I'm like, damn, faster, bigger, stronger, more athletic. And they had the dogs in them. They were like, yo, we ain't having it. All this noise, everybody been chirping about Gonzaga. We gonna put the world on notice. They ain't even on our level. Now, that's not about Max Kellerman. That's not about Stephen A. That's about the college basketball experts that had Gonzaga all day, including Dickie V. Let's not forget him. You guys were talking about Gonzaga. So Max is actually right. Not that Gonzaga is a joke. No, they should have been number 2 all year long instead of number 1 playing in
Stephen
a West
a.
Coast
First
Conference.
First of all, I feel like Henry Kissinger bringing you and Max together. Okay. I mean, this is a special moment. Right. Early in the morning at the top of the show, all right, I feel like I've brought two competitors together. Like, we've had a detente right here.
Coach, this is not easy for either one of us.
It's not really competition. I get what you're saying.
Overrated. Here's the thing. Here's the one thing I'll say is, like, when we say overrated, like, so is number 2 overrated? I mean, they challenge themselves in their schedule. Baylor was better. There's no doubt about it. But, I mean, like, here's the deal. They had a magical season. They were 40 minutes away from a championship.
I'm just saying they should have been number 2 instead of number 1.
No, they were a million miles away, Coach.
They should have been number
2
instead of
number 1.
Coach,
they were a million miles away from a championship. They had no shot to beat Baylor. And this is what I'm saying. First of all, when you said who overrates them, this is not an indictment on Gonzaga. They're a really good team. As Stephen A. said, they should have been rated 2. But when you're supposed to be rated 2 and you're actually rated 1, that is, as Stephen A. points out, that's the definition of overrated. I'm not just going to say you guys in the college basketball fraternity, because we all picked Gonzaga. Stephen A. and I both picked Gonzaga. In the media. And fans, overrated Gonzaga because they were really good, but the special team was Baylor. And one thing I take exception to is, well, it's a styles matchup. But, you know, Gonzaga was worried. Baylor had a bad style. That's like saying, you know, the 95 Bulls had a tough style to beat. Or like Floyd Mayweather had a tough style to beat. Or the 98 Yankees had a tough. They're just the best. Like, they got to the Final Four, coach, and beat the breaks off of Houston and Gonzaga.
Thing.
They got to the Final Four, and no one competed with them.
Look, I agree with you. Look, when I changed my mind, here's what I said. I compared them. Just real quickly. You know, we used to have those little touch screens where you compare teams? Better backcourt, Baylor. Better defense, Baylor. Better rebounding, Baylor. And the one matchup I thought, and more experience. And you're right about Mark Vidal. I mean, he had eight offensive rebounds. I mean, that first place sent a message. The only area I thought that maybe Gonzaga could win and could be a difference maker was Timmy. And Jonathan Chama-Chachua, I'll say for the last time this year, all right, his feet, his quickness, how active and how physical they were, ball pressure by his time, they pushed him out. I agree. If you just compare one versus two, they were overrated, but I'm not going to take anything away from their magical season.
All right, I think our next guest will co-sign that. Coach, thank you so much for being with us. We will talk to you soon
here. I love
you
guys.
But I got to keep it rolling, guys. We love you, too. You're the best. You have a fabulous day. Drink that Starbucks. Coach. You're going to need it. It's going to be long. All right. Baylor, guys, as we've been mentioning, is the king of college basketball after taking down undefeated and top overall seed Gonzaga last night. Joining us now is the man who took the program from ashes and turned it into one of the best in the country, Bears head coach Scott Drew, with us now. Coach, congrats on the win. Thank you so much for being with us this morning. And, Coach, I don't like to play around on this show. You know what it's all about. So let's just put it on Front Street. I want you to know that Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman, two of the loudest voices in the media, picked against your Bears and went with the Zags. What do you have to say about that?
Well, our team definitely listens to them, and they did a great job getting us excited to play. So I want to thank them both very much. Checks in the mail for both of you guys. And well done.
Coach, I got to tell you something, Coach. I got to put myself on Front Street. You know what? I mean, obviously, when you make predictions, you're not going to be right all the time. Make no mistake about it. I don't know if I've ever been more wrong. I mean, obviously, I did not watch you guys enough this year to see your guards, to see Mitchell and Teague and Butler, so special, to see these guys could play the way that they play. That's one thing. But the sheer domination. I sat up there. It was the first time, Coach, I'd ever made a prediction and literally thought I was wrong within 2 minutes. Like 2 minutes into the game, I said, oh, my God, what have I done? I could not believe it. Those first 2 minutes when you guys were crashing the boards and getting offensive rebound after offensive rebound, was that really the game plan to show that physically we're going to dominate you tonight? Was that the plan?
Well, we are the sixth best offensive rebounding team in the country analytically, so we do a great job being physical and getting to the glass. But, Stephen A., I got to give you props, man. I mean, you went right to Twitter and you said I was wrong, I made a mistake, and that's why I love you, man. You just keep it real. So, yeah. And you know what? In the last 2 years, we are the winningest team in the Power Five. And this group has really been special, and we had that COVID pause for 3 weeks, and who knows, maybe both of us would have been undefeated come the national championship game in Gonzaga. Coach Few is a Hall of Fame coach. They got a great program, and you guys know the difference in college basketball and the NBA. In the NBA, the best team wins because it's 4-7. In college basketball, it's 40 minutes. Anyone can have a good game, bad game. So, I mean, Gonzaga obviously didn't have one of their better games. And we have a special group. I mean, three of the last five seasons, we've been ranked number one. These guys know how to handle pressure. They know how to be in big moments. We have a joy culture. They play for each other. And I appreciate you guys, man. You make sports fun.
Thank you.
Coach, you're being modest and humble and all that, and Mark Few and Gonzaga is a tremendous program. They had a great year, and they were an excellent team. There were several excellent teams. But let's not overstate it here. You guys were – there are not many college basketball seasons where at the end of the season you go, whoa, that team right there was qualitatively different from everyone else. You got to the Final Four and totally dominated both opponents. And you did it – I'm sure you want to give your team credit, the athletes credit, but they are exceptionally well coached. They showed resiliency, which is a testament to their own character. When Gonzaga made their little run, cut it to single digits but before the half. But the way they were connected on defense, the unselfish play on offense, that's coaching. So I'm you know, I understand you're being modest in everything, but I imagine you and your team heading into this game felt disrespected. Wait, we just beat the hell out of Houston. They barely got by UCLA. We're underdogs.
Yeah. Well, and that's where we got a group that really rises to the occasion. The better the opponent, the bigger the challenge, the better they play. And it's fun coaching a group like that. But to me, this is my 18th season at Baylor, and all those players that put in all the work to get us to this level. For all the fans that have been with us through the lean years, rebuilding years, our administration that support us, this is a win for them. This is a win for Waco. It's a win for Texas. You know, we ain't won a national championship since 1966. They did a movie on that team, Texas. That's Western. Right. So We got so many great athletes and players and programs in Texas. Really excited to bring the national championship home to them.
Coach, interesting question for you. You've got a lot of people that look at this year and what we've all endured in terms of COVID. Obviously, college basketball had its challenges. Some people think that's what makes a championship this year even more valuable because of what you had to endure to get through it. Others believe that, you know what, so many people were compromised that maybe that's not the case. Where do you stand with that, and explain why, please?
Well, last year we were poised to be a number one seed, and we had Devontae Bandu and Freddie Gillespie and Tristan Clark never had a chance to play in the NCAA tournament. And as a coach, is probably the first or second toughest thing I've ever had to do, go in and say, we're not playing March Madness. And I can tell you that every player this year that came back, they are so appreciative and glad and happy the NCAA was able to put on March Madness, that the schools provided the medical care and attention so that they could play. I mean, think about it. If you got a son and he spends 14 years trying to get to a level where he can play in an NCAA tournament, and then he doesn't have that opportunity, because not everybody's going to the NBA. Not everyone's playing after college. Some people, this is it. They work their entire lives for this opportunity. And I can tell you, we're just all blessed and fortunate that we had an NCAA tournament this year. And, you know, when games get canceled, every time you play, you don't have to motivate as a coach. They're just excited to play. So hats off to everyone that made this year possible.
Yeah, and as fans of basketball, we were also very excited, too. The men's and women's tournament both didn't disappoint. Coach, you mentioned the thin years, and I'm a sucker for a good comeback story and someone who really puts in the work. So I want to go back to that, because I mentioned this earlier. The Baylor program really did hit rock bottom 2003. I'm looking at my notes here. One player charged with murdering a teammate, former head coach Dave Bliss, hiding illicit payments, other NCAA violations. Then you were hired, and look where we are now. How hard was that journey getting Baylor back to the top of basketball?
Well, Stephen A. and Max would have loved our first year, you know, because we only had 5, 6, 7 scholarship guys, depending on the time of the year. So we had like 6 walk-ons, and not only could they be on the team, but they actually could play. So, I mean, you go into games and you're 30 and 40 point underdogs, you're really coaching hard just to give yourself a chance. But those guys laid the foundation. And from there, you go to 2 Elite Eights in 2010, 2012, and then you go to some Sweet 16s. You get to, like I said, ranked first 3 out of the last 5 years. And you know what? Since 2008, only us and Kansas in the Power 5 have won 18 or more games. So we've been consistent. But you know what? When you win a championship, it's just different. And to be able to bring a trophy home and just see everyone be excited and happy. And again, you guys make sports fun, and it's a great way to enjoy things. But as a head coach, you're like a parent. When you see your kids happy when they're opening Christmas presents, you're happy. And right now I'm real happy because everybody's happy.
Now you tell them players congratulations. I apologize to all of them for my ignorance.
What a performance.
Good Lord. Lord, 2
Appreciate
minutes I knew
guys.
I was wrong. 2 minutes
Thank
I knew I was wrong.
Much.
It's one of the
Coach
one of the
Drew,
all-time
soak
great
it all in. I hope you
team.
Can stay in the moment for a very long time. Thank you so much for being with us. Congrats again.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
All right.
Goodbye, Coach.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. 2 things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, The majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's electricebikes.com. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. To the NFL we go, though. Guys, you can always count on the New York Post for a good pun each day. The headline today, Scram Darnold. The Jets making money moves. Sam Darnold is a Panther. Carolina is sending a 2021 sixth-round pick, a second and fourth-round picks in 2022 to the Jets for the 23-year-old. The Panthers plan to discuss exercising Darnold's 2022 fifth-year option with his agent, a source telling ESPN's David Newton. So the Jets are expected to select Darnold's replacement with that number two overall pick in April's draft. I really need to wear my glasses, so I apologize for that. Hopefully it made sense to all of you. You know, the blue light's really starting to mess with me. Hey, Booger. Good to see you, sir. Super Bowl champ Booger McFarlane here with us. Good to see you. Stephen A., I'm going to start with you, though. Who got the better of the deal?
Me personally, I think it's the Carolina Panthers. They've got a 23-year-old quarterback that I think has a lot of promise. Listen, I don't blame Sam Darnold for what he endured. What did he have to work with? What was the running game he had to work with? What were the receivers that he had to work with? As a matter of fact, their best receiver at one time ended up, Robbie Anderson, ended up going to the Carolina Panthers anyway, if I remember correctly. And so when you look at it from that perspective, let's call it what it is. Sam Darnold was contaminated by Adam Gase, who should have never been the head coach of the New York Jets to begin with. All right, he had a 23-25 record in three seasons at the Miami Dolphins. How the hell do you lose your job in Miami after three seasons in which you finished two games under 500 and land within the division with the New York Jets? And not only did he land with the New York Jets, but he had a say in getting rid of the GM that ultimately assisted in bringing him on board and then ended up picking his own GM in Douglas, along with the higher-ups, by the way. How the hell? See, this is the part that I'm talking about when I'm talking about privilege. You're Adam Gase, you're two games under 500 within the AFC East, you lose your job in South Beach, but somehow get the job in the same division in New York City, and you got some power. How the hell that happened? No wonder they only won 28% of their
games. Well, because he showed up and presented himself very professionally, Stephen A.
I love it. Well, if you're going to make jokes, Max Kellerman, You got to put the smirk and smile on your face, too, because people might think you're serious when clearly you're joking, because you're talking about when he showed up to his press conference, introductory press conference, as the new coach of the New York Jets. Ha! That's how he looked. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they call it Gaston now because of him. He looked flat out zooted, okay? That's what Sam Darnold had to work with over the last 2 years. So I say to everybody, excuse me, you got a guy in Sam Darnold right here. You're going to look at him. I saw Mel Kiper Jr. talking earlier. If Sam Darnold was in this year's NFL draft, he would have been a top three pick. That's who you give away. You get a fourth round pick. You get a sixth round pick. I mean, come on now. I'm just saying he's 23 years old and he didn't have good coaching. He didn't have a good organizational structure. The Jets are notoriously dysfunctional. One of your owners is the ambassador to the UK. His brother, whomever, is running football operations, okay? I'm just looking at it, and I'm saying this is not a good situation for a young quarterback to be in. So Sam Darnold gets a fresh start. okay? Working for a coach and playing for a coach who can coach. I think we all know he can coach, all right? And the Carolina Panthers organization is just a better organization than the New York Jets. I think they win in this.
The Jets won the trade. Let me explain. Because the Panthers are getting a guy who a lot of football people think highly of still in Sam Darnold. And you can see why. He has a lot of tools. I'm not ruling out that he might not have a good career. It's still possible for sure. Panthers didn't do bad for themselves. Second round picking some stuff. Okay. Probably can't get a quarterback that good in the second round unless you're really, really good and lucky at evaluating quarterbacks. But the Jets got the better of the deal. And let me tell you why. Because this is the Jets and they always make the wrong decision. I was thinking there's a good chance they hold on to Sam Darnold. Why would that be a mistake? Because while maybe he turns out to be good, and maybe you could blame Adam Gase, and it's an organizational failure. After all, it's not just about drafting. It's about development, right? Everyone knows that. But he does have a resume that's now 3 years long. And he's been over that time the worst starter in the NFL. And so if he does become a good quarterback, he's overcoming a sample size of evidence now that tells you, nah, maybe he won't be a good quarterback. He's still very young. There's time. I'm just saying that's up in the air. And even if he does, now you got to pay him. The rookie clock has been ticking. We're into year four, right? Now, you could say what you want about Sam Darnold's talent, everything. To me, when I've watched Zach Wilson, which I've done more over the last several weeks, oh, my God, I see what people see. I think he is specially talented. Like, it's almost, I get why everyone loves Trevor Lawrence, me too, but it's almost like you kind of lucked out into picking second because that pressure's off. You get to take Zach Wilson. That's how highly I think of him, having watched him more now. Now, let me say this. It's not just that. It's that you reset the rookie quarterback clock. You're on year one. You have no decision to make over whether to pay that guy. And for a team that already had in the next 2 years, four firsts and three thirds, you now have four firsts, three seconds, three thirds, three fourths. You have a potentially franchise quarterback in Zach Wilson, and at least you don't have 3 years of book on him saying it's not trending in the right direction. You don't have to pay him yet, and you have an embarrassment of riches in the draft to build around him. That's taking a shot. That's taking your swing, not getting cheated if you're the Jets. I think they did the right thing, and I think by moving Sam Darnold and taking Zach Wilson and getting a second, a fourth, and a sixth, they won the trade.
I completely disagree with you, Max. I think the Panthers won the trade and really by a wide margin. First of all, I'm on record as saying if I were Joe Douglas and the Jets, I would not have traded Sam Darnold. But they decided to. So now, who won the trade, the Jets or the Panthers? The Panthers got a 23-year-old quarterback who has a ton of untapped potential. You pair him with Joe Brady, the same offensive coordinator that took over with Joe Burrow down in Baton Rouge, and we saw what Joe Burrow became. So now imagine what a 23-year-old Sam Darnold is going to do with a better offensive coordinator, a better head coach, a better organization, better weapons around him. He's going to finally get coached. Did we not see what happened to Ryan Tannehill when he left Adam Gates and went with Arthur Smith in Tennessee? Did we not see that? Because if you didn't see that, you're going to see it again. You're going to see a quarterback leave Adam Gates and leave whatever dysfunction we call the New York Jets, go to a better organization with better talent. Now, Max, to your point, when you watch Zach Wilson on tape, what are you looking at? Okay, because here's what I see when I watch it. Here's exactly what I see. I see a quarterback that can make some of the same throws, if not the exact same throws, that Sam Darnold can make. So when we talk about talent, he's just as talented. Okay, Zach Wilson played behind an offensive line at BYU that was one of the best in college football. He didn't get touched. So how do we know that Zach Wilson or what he's going to do under duress, under, you know, when he faces difficult times? I know what Sam Darnold is going to do because he faced those difficult times in the National Football League. And at the end of every season, even with Adam Gase and all that dysfunction, he played better and better. So now I'm going to put at the very worst, an equal talented quarterback in a very, very quarterback-friendly system with a better offensive coordinator, a better head coach, just a better overall organization. I think Sam Darnold is going to flourish and play better than Zach Wilson short-term and long-term. So if you're Carolina, you got to be smiling today. Like, man, we stole. We got a franchise quarterback for a 2, a 4, and a 6. You know what, man? Cash that ticket. Let's go home. So the Panthers won the trade, Max.
Listen, you look at Moore. Anderson. Remember, Sam Darnold played with Robbie Anderson. Remember, the year before, they were 7-9. All right, and then they snowballed to 2-14. We all know that the organization was dysfunctional. I'm not escaping the fact that Sam Darnold was a turnover machine at USC. He's turned the ball over with the New York Jets. He got sacked about 35 times last year, 98 times over the first 3 years of his career, not even counting the amount of times that he's been hit. But this is the sport of football, as I brought up to you yesterday, Max, where we're talking about, you know, a collective effort. One player is not going to make or break a team unless they're just that god-awful. And I don't think that we look at Sam Darnold that way. It's the fact that the Jets, led by Adam Gase, who should have never had that damn job, that man, the contaminating effect is what you witnessed from Sam Darnold. I think there's nowhere for him to go but up.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with that. He might get better. Maybe. Maybe he's better than what we've seen. I think there's a good chance he is, because what we have seen is the dead last worst starting quarterback in the NFL. Like, if you were worse than Sam Darnold, you weren't starting anymore. And, in fact, some guys who were worse were starting for too long and then finally weren't starting. And that's just the facts over the last 3 years. Of course, circumstance plays into that. And you can say, Booger, that he's at least as talented as Zach Wilson. To my eye, Zach Wilson looks like he has more arm talent than Sam Darnold. And that, all of that ignores. So, like, maybe Darnold has this upside. Maybe it can be tapped into with Joe Brady and all that stuff. There's like Baker Mayfield also with bad coaching. He did not so much with good coaching. But maybe not. We will see. Same thing with Zach Wilson. The difference is he's coming in on a rookie contract and you have more draft capital to build around him.
Okay, I will leave you with this. 33 quarterbacks qualified for QBR. Sam Darnold was dead last. Teddy Bridgewater was 17th. Booger McFarland, always good to see you, but I'm still annoyed about your slick little UConn comment in the commercial break, so I might be over it the next time you're on the show. Probably not, though. Might take one more, because that's how I am. Have a wonderful week, Booger. We'll see you soon. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Did you see this? The Nets barely beat the Knicks in Brooklyn last night. Granted, James Harden was dealing with a hammy. This team has dealt with their fair share of injuries. KD sitting more games than he's actually played. But let's give Kyrie some props, putting on a show last night and carrying the team. Now, Stephen A., many expect this team to represent the East in the finals. But could there be trouble ahead for the Nets? Are you starting to get concerned about all these injuries?
I'm getting concerned because of the injuries, yes. I think that, first of all, major, major props to James Harden, because, you know, when he's injured, he's injured. This is not a dude that loves to miss games. He doesn't miss many games. That's just not what he does. You know, but I think that when you look at the Brooklyn Nets, my only concern about the Brooklyn Nets is primarily themselves. Now, obviously, that comes with the attachment that if you're worried about them imploding, then obviously you have to look at teams like the Milwaukee Bucks and Philadelphia 76ers and an outside chance with the Miami Heat and take it a little bit more seriously. Because I'm still wondering, as I said weeks ago, what the hell is taking, you know, KD and AD so long to get back? Certainly, you know, the playoffs are the priority. What happens in June and July, it's what it's all about. We all understand that. But in the same breath, you just look at this team in terms of chemistry, cohesiveness, and what have you, and you kind of wonder when these guys are going to come back and play some games. And, you know, one minute you hear that he's on his way back, then he could be ready to go. Another time, you don't see that at all. And then Kyrie Irving, you know, for all his greatness, and make no mistake, it's pure greatness. It's pure greatness in box office, and he put on an absolute show last night. The flip side to it is that when are you going to take, you know, when's the next time he's just going to want to take off? How many personal days is he going to use, et cetera, et cetera? You wonder about this stuff. Meanwhile, teams like Milwaukee are saying, hey, listen, we coming. Well, we don't believe it's a foregone conclusion that Brooklyn is coming out of the East. The Philadelphia 76ers with Joel Embiid coming back. We'll see what's going to happen in that regard. And so I just think that it's worth paying attention to in that regard. Not necessarily the competition itself, but the fact that the Nets seem to have this attitude, we can turn it on and off when we want to. The truly great teams can, for the most part, but you never know when a potential hiccup may occur. It's not about the other teams. It's about them. And I wonder about it sometimes, to be quite honest with you.
I have the exact opposite reaction after last night's game. The Knicks were feeling good about themselves. They had a nice lead at the half. The Nets down two of their two best players, because Kyrie is great, and he's not only the best show in basketball, he's elevating to near MVP caliber play now. And yet, if you had to rank them on the Nets, you'd say KD 1, Harden 2, Kyrie 3. So they're missing their best two players, really, after Harden had to leave. And the Knicks are feeling good, and the Nets aren't playing defense. And the Knicks put up 60-something points, you know, it was close to 70 points in the first half. And then just like that, Stephen A., they turned it on. Kyrie turned it on. The Nets turned on the defense better than it was certainly in the first half. And they win. The Knicks, as we know, they're a solid team. They're not world beaters, but they're a solid team. They play with pride. They play defense. Nothing they could do. The Nets won. And by the way, the Nets have the best record in the Eastern Conference, and KD basically hasn't played all year. And Harden just got there. It's not like they had an offseason to all play together. This team is so good, it's scary. Now, certainly, KD's prolonged absence and the fact that he's coming off an Achilles and all that, yes, injury is a concern. What I'm saying is this. If the Nets are healthy, I'm at the point where I don't think anyone else can win the championship this year if they're healthy. And I think that includes the Lakers. If the Nets are healthy, because now I've seen the Nets down, like I've seen each star, we know KD can carry a team. I've seen Harden do it by himself, beat some good teams by himself. And now I've seen Kyrie beat a solid team with a big lead at the half when he was the only star on the floor. Like, they can all carry a team. And the three of them together, I keep saying it, let me be very clear. If and when this team ever gets healthy, by the end of this season, meaning playoffs and everything, we will say that was the greatest offensive team in the history of American team sports. They will win the title. It's just an issue of health.
Well, I appreciate you coming to the party, because that certainly wasn't your position at the start of the season, but that's neither here nor there. What I will tell you this. When I look at when you saw him play, you still had that for the first month or two of the season. But here's the deal. You didn't think they would play defense good enough. That was your position. But that's fair enough. Bottom line is this.
Right.
Here's what you look at when you look at the Brooklyn Nets. Again, they are showstoppers, bona fide showstoppers. These brothers are real and on another level. But when we look at the great, great teams in the NBA, the reigning defending champion Lakers, you know, and we think about the Milwaukee Bucks and adding Drew Holiday and those boys there, okay, and P.J. Tucker's a big pickup for them because of what he can do on the defensive end of the floor, okay? You look at the Philadelphia 76ers, they're coming, they're not going away. Well, you look at Denver, I shouldn't say all of these other teams because there's only one that's getting to come out of the West, okay? You don't have to face all of those teams in the West, just one of them. All I'm saying is this attitude that we can just turn it on and off while other teams are building chemistry, I think could potentially be a mistake. Now, where it gets interesting is that the Lakers obviously have the same issue for very legitimate reasons, because Anthony Davis is injured and LeBron James is injured. So they're not, but they already had a season together in which they won a championship. So the chemistry and cohesiveness is there. Plus, we have to look at Brooklyn, Max, and we got to ask ourselves, we love what we're seeing. Kyrie Irving is averaging 28 a game, 51% shooting, 39-plus percentage from three-point range. He's only averaging two turnovers a game. I mean, when you look at it from that perspective, he's been nothing short of sensational, and he deserves props for that, and he's been selfless, not selfish at all, very selfless. James Harden, we say the same thing about him. Kevin Durant, we know that about him. But you also have to find yourself wondering that when all else fails, because of that absence of chemistry from not having played together, but so much, are they going to do that if pressurized moments show up? Those are legitimate questions to ask, is all I'm saying.
Fine, but I'm just saying the evidence that I've seen before leads me to the opposite conclusion, like in the opposite direction. Like, they have chemistry because, as you said, Kyrie's been totally unselfish, and so is Harden. We know KD's an unselfish player. Mm-hmm. But Harden and Kyrie, can they do it? They're showing the pursuit of greatness is what is most important to them. And you only get that as with your team. You have to have team greatness. Mm-hmm. And Stephen A., James Harden rolls out of bed, as I said, shows up in Brooklyn looking like a hot mess, fat and out of shape, and gives the league that work. Took him on a West Coast trip, beat the best teams in the Western Conference, 5-0 on that trip, by himself. And then Kyrie and Harden, the chemistry they already have. All I'm saying is when KD gets back, that chemistry's only going to get better. They turn on the defense as they did last night, well, seemingly at will. The fact that they already have the best record in the East.
He wasn't fat enough to say, when he arrived in Portland.
Looking like a hot mess.
He looked like a hot mess at the beginning when he went against Portland and dropped 44.
Right.
That was when
right.
he was with.
That's what I'm saying.
Houston.
He walked out of bed. He walked out of bed a hot mess and gave the league business. I mean, like, by the time the playoffs get here and these three dudes have played together a little bit, it's a wrap. And last night to me was just more evidence.
Well, Vegas gives them the best odds to win it all. That, according to Caesars, they have the Nets winning the title. Mm. Oh, okay, Stephen A. We shall see. You're going to like that little East Coast, West Coast trip, something you're familiar with, sir.